Hey there, Aaron here with Out Now with Aaron and Abe. Abe is currently on vacation, but we do have a number of bonus reviews, so just setting up that the following is a review for The Substance.
People always ask for something new. It's inevitable. At 50, well, it stops.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger, more beautiful, more perfect. One single injection unlocks your DNA and will release another version of yourself. This is The Substance.
Okay, here we are with another mini review. There's so many films coming out right now. I want to make sure that we're able to cover as many as we can, because there's some films that are just really worth talking about at for an extended period of time. So joining me right now, we have Mr. Peter Paris.
Hello. Hey. What's up, Aaron? I'm good. I'm actually in like a soundproof recording, even though I'm not using the cool microphones. Like a friend of mine asked if I could help on an event, and people who know LA, I'm in the Fairfax district by the famous Cantor's Deli. Yes, in a sound booth, all professional, except I'm just using my AirPods, which is not professional.
I hope you go to Cantor's later, because that's just good stuff right there.
That is true. The guy who runs this place, it just ordered dinner for us. We're getting Mendocino Farms, which is good. Yeah.
Too. Well, all right. You're right next to Cantor's, but I get it.
I mean, it's literally the next, it's like three doors down. It's so close.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about like LA related stuff, because we're going to talk about The Substance.
Although not shot, I don't think it was shot in LA.
Definitely not.
It's
too French to have been an LA shot film.
Yeah. It's like Kubrick shooting Eyes Wide Shut, and it's supposed to be New York, Manhattan, or whatever. Like, it's clearly not.
Yeah. But we are going to talk about The Substance, a film that you should have already heard some of the trailer to, but certainly have been pinned as notable for being outrageous and all these things and what have you. We'll talk about what the film is in just a second here. But I want to start this off by saying this is from director Coralie Farjee, who previously made the film Revenge, which I think is on Netflix right now. So it's not hard to like watch if you want to catch up for a previous film. But Peter, to get you into this conversation about The Substance, a film I want to hear you talk about, I'm going to start off by noting when I saw this film about a month ago at this point, I directly said to you, I'm pretty sure this is going to be your favorite film of the year. So now you have seen the film. I want to know, how accurate am I in that statement and why?
I mean, obviously the year is not over. So, I mean, I haven't seen Megapolis. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
Megapolis. I have not seen that yet. But I mean, I would have to look at my top five, Furiosa. Like, it, yeah, I mean, it feels, how about this? I guess my answer would be, yeah, you're probably right. It probably is my number one right now. But in a weird way, what's more interesting to me is when I saw this, like Zone of Interest, which is such a different movie or whatever, it felt like, it's not necessarily, is it the best movie of the year? It's the, is this going to be on my best of the 2020s? And I'm pretty sure it will be on my best of the 2020s.
And that's
which
what I
should make
hear.
You think, well, then obviously it's the best of the year.
That's right. What I want to hear the why about.
Because I guess I feel like a best of the decade, you really want to like, you want to see it a few times. You want to see by the end of this decade, what the movie was about, how relevant does that still seem? Like, how poignant is it and everything? And it feels like the kind of movie that I'm pretty sure will still resonate in 20 to 30 or whatever. Whereas a movie that something like Furiosa, which I think is just incredible and everything, I guess I feel like in a weird way, Fury Road was on my best of the 2010s. And I guess Furiosa could too. It's certainly possible, but it doesn't feel as important to me that Furiosa makes the list as like Fury Road did. And so for The Substance, unless we have another great kind of doesn't necessarily have to be body horror, but very like not subtle, strong take from a feminist director about, you know, aging and celebrity and all that. I would be surprised if there's some other movie like this on the works that would take its place. So, but to me, the number one movie of the year, though, isn't it, I guess that's always tricky about when you're picking your films and stuff, is like, there's why something should be a part of the decade. And then also what in that particular year were the things that really like resonated or I just really connected to, and they're not necessarily the same. Yeah. It's weird, but you were absolutely right. It was absolutely a Peter movie. It was absolutely pretty much from the frame, the first shot, which very to me feels like it's, is it Fage? Is that her last name?
Barge.
It very much felt to me that she was aping one of the movies that also made my my number one of the 2010s is Jonathan Glazer's Under the Skin. That first shot of the egg, the yolk that becomes two, and it's all about like the sound design, and it's all like very much like puts you in this like certain headspace. I was like, oh, this is kind of like the Under the Skin opening shot of the eyeball. But yeah, like I liked it.
I want to stop you there because I want to talk about what this film is and give a brief whatever it,
a summary.
Yeah, but with that in mind, first off, I feel like I get a little credit for guessing that this will be your number one film of the year, or at least getting close.
Oh, you totally do. Technically, though, there's 3 months left.
We have a Sean Baker film who I know you also are a big fan of. So, I mean, there's
oh, yes, which actually I just got a screening for that. So I'm very, yes, can't wait.
I'll probably see you there. Beyond that, I do admire the foresight you want to have about thinking that this could be a best of the decade for you, even if it doesn't end up as number one. My mind doesn't compute that way. I can't think ahead in that capacity. I can make guesses as to like where my best of decade would be or what have you, but separating the idea of this is my favorite thing of this year. Why would it not be like in the best of the decade? I can't process that way. But you know, good on you. I like the forward thinking on your part.
Barbie was not my best film of the year, but I can sort of see if I do like a top 20, I can kind of see it because that's clearly a big, like Jordan Peele's Get Out. Get Out was not my number one movie of the year, but those are very zeitgeisty movies and they're very good movies. Also, so does that kind of make sense? Like,
it does, but that also speaks to how you're constructing lists to begin with, right? Because you're going necessarily against, Not necessarily like tagging things up with it's on this big list because I admire the movie so much, but because there's a societal component here that speaks to it being a big deal. And also I happen to like it.
Right. But I mean, there are plenty of movies that you and I don't like that clearly make a lot of money. I mean, like, I don't think I would call Super Mario Brothers a zeitgeist movie. That's just more like, yeah, of course that was going to make a lot of money. I liked it more than you did, but neither of us put it on our best of anything list. So I don't know would you say that's a zeitgeist movie? I don't think it's just making a lot of money. That's what I'm saying. Like,
I wasn't saying money. I said zeitgeist. The cultural components of it all. Like, I mean, Oppenheimer wasn't the biggest film of the year. It wasn't the fourth biggest film of the year, but it was certainly a film that was in the conversation for a good reason. Beyond just the partnering up with Barbie, there's a whole different conversation that we don't need to have. I want to talk about The Substance, but I do admire where this was going. We'll revisit this when we get to 2029.
As a side note, another movie that I'm pretty sure is going to make my best of the decade. Again, if I'm talking top 20, I would be surprised if Godzilla Minus One is not on your list.
I mean, no, that's obvious.
It's a great movie. It's one of the best movies in a franchise that you adore. Like, but was that your number one movie of the year?
It was my number two movie of last year. So.
Okay, it was pretty high. Okay, I would be like, yeah, there's no way that's not going to make his list. Like, you just said today, you saw it five times in the theaters.
Five.
Yeah, so there's, so there. So that, maybe that answers your question. Why wasn't Godzilla number one?
And even even right now, I have a premature letterboxed list of my top films of the decade so far. So it's like, yeah, I have given a little thought about this, more so because it'll save time later on when I'm like, what are my decades? And I have to do a whole bunch of research. Let's get back to The Substance. This movie, it's directed by Coralie Farget. It stars Demi Moore as Elizabeth Sparkle. Great name. An Academy Award winning actress. And the host of like a popular TV aerobic show. She gets fired by Dennis Quaid, playing a slimy TV executive who is basically the same age as her, because she is now considered too old. So putting her sorrows aside, she is given the opportunity to use a black market drug that will
Ozempic. No, I'm
kidding. Known as The Substance, that will essentially create a younger, better version of herself.
Correct. Which will it is still her.
I'll delve into as many spoilers as I want. Right, yeah, about this premise. I'm trying to be careful. But yes, there the whole thing of it is you remember you are one. That is a big selling purpose of this thing. Margaret Qualley plays this younger, better version. There are rules. There are parameters, and there's distinct things that take place when using the substance and how this whole deal works. But essentially, only Demi Moore or Margaret Qualley's version of this same person can exist at one time. And things go from there. So things inevitably will go off the rails because this is a body horror film. But in the time being, while Demi Moore is no longer being able to work, Elizabeth Sparkle is no longer able to work, the younger version of herself receives instant popularity for a variety of reasons.
For also an aerobic show.
That's what we want to call it. So with all of that said, you've already expressed that. I've already basically just told everyone you love this movie, and then you backed me up by saying, yeah, it's going to be like my best of the decade. Just to get my thoughts out of the way. I also really like this movie. I think it's highly entertaining, for one thing. For being a pretty gnarly body horror film, it was like, rewarding to see that it got a B cinema score, which is a weird thing to say, but it's because I feel like,
well, it could have been an F.
It could have easily been an F, especially based on the places it goes. But like, that says, okay, they knew how to sell this movie. Like, people walked in knowing it'd be this kind of crazy thing, and it actually lives up to being that crazy thing. But like I just said, it is entertaining. Like, it's fun to watch the way this thing plays out,
especially that it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it's quite an ordeal to like go through this whole thing. But yeah, I think it's quite compelling. It has a number of wild turns in it, to say the least. And Moore and Qualley are very good in this movie. And so is Quaid.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So is Quaid. Quaid is also great in this movie. Like, from that has only so many characters and only so many places it actually goes, it uses all of that to its betterment, and it's expertly directed. I was surprised. I knew it was a hit at Cannes, and I was surprised to see, like, what did it win at Cannes? It's like, I assume directing or something, and it's like screenplay. It's a good script. It's a good script, no doubt. But it's like, it's so aggressively directed. We're like, oh, okay. That would have been my initial guess if I didn't already know it was a screenplay award. With all that in mind, yeah, I think the movie's very entertaining. It's obviously speaking to societal standards and Hollywood celebrity and any number of things that we'll probably talk about in a few seconds here. But it does it without worrying about subtlety, because why? That's not the kind of film this is. It's gonna bludgeon you over the head with what it's doing, and it has a lot of fun doing it. I very much enjoyed what this film had to offer. But Peter, please expand on where you're enjoying.
Well, one of the things I'm very curious about. I mean, obviously, as Aaron likes to say, you know, I'm old as dirt. But my favorite movie of the year, my favorite movie of all time is Sunset Boulevard, and one of the things that I really loved about that movie is that I think I saw it when I was 20, and then I moved to LA, and then I saw it again in my 30s, and then now I'm in my 50s. And I feel like, you know, three main characters are at different ages and different stages of their lives. And the movie has what I call like different entry points. And this movie kind of does too, but I guess it's only two. right? There is the middle-aged version, which is Demi Moore. And then there is, assuming this, I get 20-something version, which is Margaret Qualley. And I always find stories like that very interesting, not just for the piece themselves, but also for when I'm talking about them with people and like where they are in their life and everything. And I'd be very curious to see, like, the only people I know that have seen The Substance are like fellow critics, which are all about younger than me, but like not 22 or something. And so I would be, I'm very curious. I'd imagine that they would like it and stuff, but I would be curious to see if they're more close to Margaret Qualley's age. Like, how do they see the film? How much do they empathize with Elizabeth Sparkle versus, she's just Sue, right? I don't think she has a last name.
She doesn't have a last name.
Yeah, she's just Sue. Of course, she's Margaret Qualley. Right. Yeah.
I feel like that's a good joke about the film. It's how limited knowledge they have, and they just bring her up to the top anyways. Like, yeah, Sue, great.
And I think the other thing that, like, I think is interesting is, like, there's always this kind of conversation in art about, like, there are people who seem to come fully formed, filmmaker, painter, whatever, singer out of nowhere, and their music or whatever, it doesn't necessarily seem informed by the other things that came before them. And then there are other artists where you're like, oh, well, clearly P.T. Anderson, like clearly he likes Scorsese, like clearly he likes Robert Altman and everything.
Yeah,
I think what's interesting about Farjay's movie is like, you can see the black comedy template of something like Sunset Boulevard, which is like 1950 Billy Wilder, but there's also very much a dreamlike, and like you said, body horror quality, which makes me think of Mulholland Drive. And I think that's interesting. It's like all three of these movies are about Hollywood. They all have like a woman star and everything, and they're very different. And for me, as a person who's seen all these movies and many more about Hollywood, it's very rewarding. I do wonder what it would be like if you haven't seen a lot of stuff about Hollywood doing Hollywood, what something like this would be. And then I'll be curious to see what you think about that. And then another thing is that, like, well, I wouldn't say like Sunset Boulevard, but certainly like Mulholland and other ones, it is very much a Hollywood or Los Angeles that is not really a one-to-one to what it's really as you know, I live in Los Angeles. You live a little outside of Los Angeles. So we know Los Angeles and Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And that's clearly, it's not just because she's a French filmmaker and we have no idea where she it's got heightened. To shoot it.
It's a heightened version.
Yeah, it's like a heightened thing. And like if you look at I would say like The Player, right? The Player feels like that is probably what Los Angeles was like in the 90s. Is that the 90s?
It's 90s. It's also a satire, but it certainly leans.
But it seems very much like the vernacular, this kind of laid back privilege that the characters have.
It leans to the inside baseball. Like, yes, that's very real. Yeah. And it's also Altman, who's not really a stylistic filmmaker by comparison.
But this movie, I know, and like, we're not going to go into Last Tech spoilers, but I think it's okay to talk about the first 5 minutes. Sure. First 5 minutes, like after this amazing shot of an egg, of a yolk that becomes two with, you know, a shot of the substance, you have this great it's not really a single take, but it's a single frame of workers putting together a Hollywood star for Elizabeth Sparkle and how over time
it becomes
degraded and everything. And it looks like a Hollywood. Yeah, I mean, that is basically what it looks like. It's the same marble around it and everything. But already there, it's like you said, it's heightened. It's very symmetrical how they're putting it together there. It's very precise. Even the cracks that come 5 minutes later in the time lapse seem precise and not chaotic or whatever. And I don't know. I think that's a very, I don't know how anybody, even if you're not interested in Hollywood, like just from a filmmaking thing, it's kind of like when you listen to a song that is just very well produced and like the audio is very like, I don't know how you wouldn't have an appreciation for that. There's like a level of skill and it feels like every moment in this movie is exactly what this director wanted. And I think that's pretty, I always appreciate that.
No, that's interesting. And that's a area to look at as far as when you make satire, how much are you mocking things or what, like, right. and with Farjay, any filmmaker that's making films, like making films in general, obviously they must have a passion for filmmaking and film, like what comes with that as far as the world around them or whatnot. They don't necessarily need to respect it, but they certainly have a perspective on things. So seeing the kind of seeing a film female filmmaker take Demi Moore and put her in this kind of scenario, there's obviously points that are being made, can be made, will be made, but there has to be a fun that comes with that, given all of the stuff that she puts both of these women through throughout the course of this film. And that, again, I feel comes from just wanting to, you know, play in the mud, like, you know, get in this world and have this kind of fun. I will note, by the way, on the top of Ferrage's Wikipedia page, her influences are Cronenberg, Carpenter, Lynch, and Haneke. Obvious.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah. None of those are, that's not a bad thing at all. Just like,
no, yeah, that no, tracks. It's not. It's just, that, right. Yeah.
It's like, if you had to add, it's like, yeah, that tracks. Like, this. Yeah. Step back to the other points you're making about, like, what kind of audience is receptive to a film like this. I obviously can't speak to everybody. I will say younger people go to the movies more, so they're the ones mainly seeing this movie right now. I think the better question is the gendered aspect of this. Are the male audiences that are watching this movie more responsive than the female audiences? Not just because of the body horror of it all, but in terms of, is there a natural inclination to think, well, it's a woman director, and therefore the things that she's putting on display, I can rally behind because it must be good for my sensibilities to say I agree with this while also being entertained by this shockingly violent and very provocative film. Like, I'm not trying to diminish the quality of what a viewer thinks of a movie based on this kind of thing, but I do think that question occurs when you're looking at, you know, Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley in a film like this doing the things that they do, while also saying feminism. Like,
I will say, though, don't you think that it's interesting if you did not know who made this movie and you're only seeing the first half of the movie? The first half of the movie, I'm a guy, but I feel like the movie does sort of almost want to trick you with a presumed male gaze, and it is very sexualized, very, I guess, pleasing to the eye. That is a part of me is like, if a guy had made this movie, that first half, I feel like we would be like, well, this is still just serving the male audience and everything. Like, or do you not think so? I think the back half sort of, you know, betrays that. It basically is like, you've enjoyed so much of this, and now I'm going to put you through the mud and the dirt and the chaos and everything of that. Like, I mean, I'm going to shove it in your face.
There's for sure a means to an ends as far as what it's doing.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a whole experience. So, like, you know, watching this in chunks on Netflix, I don't think would do it to so many favors. It's tough to say, because when you're tackling this kind of subject matter and these kinds of visuals, there's always a difference when it comes to what a male filmmaker is doing versus a female filmmaker is doing, because they have different perceptions of what eroticism is, or what have you.
And sure.
I feel like that can be plenty evident when you watch certain kinds of films and, like, see the approach that they take. And that's just speaking to male and female. I mean, there's a whole variety of one's form and how they look at things or what have you. Would I say that this movie is leaning into a certain male? I mean, in an obvious sort of way, yes, as far as what's presented in front of you on screen. Like, there's no doubt an audience that's going to respond, you know, have a certain kind of response, or at least a certain kind of emotion attached with these things. And now we're just two guys talking about this, so it's hard to be like, but what is the female side of this? I have no idea. I mean, I'm aware that more of the rotten reviews that are out there, I'm not gonna say it's an even split by any means. It's not. It's a well-reviewed movie overall, but I have seen, you know, female critics taking more issue with this movie than the male critics as far as ratios are concerned.
I mean, to be fair, her first movie, I think it's her first movie, is Revenge, right?
Yes,
she's only got two movies,
yeah.
And that movie is a, you know, rape,
revenge,
you know, violent. Like, I mean, she literally is dealing with a thing that a lot of I mean, people in general today, but especially, like, I would think a lot of, like, women don't necessarily want to see those things. And to be fair, in the movie, the actual scene is off screen. But I mean, So she, from the very beginning, she's kind of a provocateur where she's like, well, I'm going to take this thing that is kind of unseemly. And then a lot of women don't, like, in society now, we don't really like that, like, kind of stuff. And so even there, I was like, well, I'm kind of prepared for her to go someplace because she already sort of did with her last movie, you know?
Yeah, we have to take a different. I mean, I haven't seen Revenge yet. Like, I still haven't seen that movie. So it's like,
You know the premise, though.
I know the premise, but, like, what I'm saying is not everyone's going to know that, right? Not everyone's going to be in that kind of foreign place. But with that said, this movie, regardless of, like, the content that you're getting, especially early on, it's not as though the film is, like, not making you aware of the kind of movie it is from the get-go in terms of the way we're seeing things, the way Dennis Quaid's introduced, where he's, like, get these nasty closes of him eating shrimp in a restaurant. It's disgusting. Like, I think the film does have a way of balancing the grossness of everything taking place with what comes with having these specific people, you know, being presented as they are. And even when that's the kind of center focus of the film, it's still a body horror movie. I mean, Margaret Qualley's entrance into this world is not simple. So it's like, if there's a, you know, that's, if anything, it's just letting the movie breathe for a bit to say, okay, let's settle down from the ruptures of skin and various forms of Cronenbergian level disgustingness and just, like, be paused for a second. Like, if the, you know, if the balance of that is, and now this is how everything looks now, it's like, not only is that, you know, a relief from the body horror of it all, but it's also a, and this is the kind of movie we are. This is a movie that's saying this person, Demi Moore, is too old. Regardless of what you think of Demi Moore, like, she just doesn't belong. And now we have Margaret Qualley, who does belong. It's making that very clear by saying, there it all is right there. And in doing so, it's also like, it's gross. I like to think about all of this stuff. Like, I don't think it's letting you off the hook, I guess, in that first half by, you know, presenting things that are more inherently, you know, exciting to see compared to the most gross stuff possible in the latter half of the movie.
No, it's not. It's funny. The other thing I was thinking of, which sort of, like, under the skin, is that, like, I feel like a lot of times when we, especially as, like, people appreciate film and write about film and stuff, is that, like, typically we tend to go towards things that are subtle, whereas things that are broad, you know, a lot of times critics don't necessarily, like, love, even though a lot of mainstream audiences, like, love it and they completely respond to it or whatever. Like, a lot of times I think people who write about movies and see movies all the time are kind of bored by something that seems so broad and obvious. And it's funny because, like, this movie is not subtle at all. Like, it's not really a subtle movie, like, but it's very engaging and stuff. And it's like, it's just so confident in its everything. It's framing, its sound design, that I can't help but, like, be kind of swept away.
I agree.
Even though it's not really subtle. Yeah.
I agree with that in regards to this film. I would say, to speak to that last point, I can agree to a point in that I think many critics are convinced that they're supposed to respond to things that are subtle, while audiences are convinced that they're supposed to respond to things that are broad. Otherwise they'll say, we're not snobby like critics, and critics will say, we're not
idiots or whatever.
We're not morons like general. And those are generalizations and stereotypes.
Of course. Sure. Right. But
then you look at the films that come out in a given year and what's being responded to. And I mean, Spielberg's not subtle. I mean, it's like, Scorsese's not necessarily subtle. Everyone mocks the damn rat that walks across the screen and Departed. I mean, like, the subtlety is not necessarily, you know, the winning formula to making the best film of the year, nor is being overtly broad the only way to win over a general audience. Again, I speak to that B cinema score for this movie, where it's like, no, this movie's not subtle whatsoever, at least in its broader range of things. I feel like there is subtleties to some of what it's saying. It's just never, it's rarely presented as such. And I think that comes down to performance. I think what, like, especially, you know, given the kind of Oscar buzz that Demi Moore is starting to generate here, whether or not that actually turns into an Oscar, I'd be surprised. But I do think that comes down to not just the obvious shock value aspects of what her character goes through, but choices that she is making as an actress that
yes.
speak to what talent she does possess outside of the, you know, what she's overtly presenting or whatnot.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, also, that's why you get that conversation to begin with, because she's doing a good job and not just being a tool to be used for this movie.
I mean, yeah, I guess there's I guess to me, like, subtle can very much, what is subtle can very much like seep into what is more like what we now call like a vibes movie. Like Under the Skin or Michael Mann's Miami Vice, like the plots and the big points are not subtle, but they're both films that rely heavily on like
mood,
wordless moments of atmosphere. Sound designer score and landscapes. And, yeah. And yes, you can might be like, what's going on here? Like type of vibe, I guess. Well, I don't think this movie's like that, but I mean,
no, because it's too beyond just being too extreme in its content. It's also propulsive. It moves for being a 2.5 hour movie. It has a lot to do within that time.
Yeah, it absolutely does. But yeah, I really like you brought up something that I want to discuss, which is that like I liked I mean, Demi Moore, I think, is fantastic. And, you know, like there's a big scene that we can get to that is probably the big scene for her if she gets the Oscar nomination. But I got to say, like, I have always found physicality very, I don't know if it's bringing us back to vaudeville and like Chaplin era or whatever, but like someone like Margaret Qualley, who started off as like, I think a ballet dancer, that like that's what she was going to go to school for, and then something happens where she doesn't do that and then she becomes an actress. I think dialogue wise I think Qualley has really evolved probably Once Upon a Time in Hollywood on. I think earlier stuff I always was like, well, but she always had like a physicality about herself because she's a former dancer and everything. And I would say this movie and Yorgos Lanthimos, Kinds of Kindness. That's another one where her physicality, like the way she can like move her body or her body is being moved for her. It's a lot of interesting choices. Because I tend to think a lot of time when we think of choices, my thing is usually is an actor who's in a David Mamet play or something. Like the line is, you know, will you go to lunch? And it's like, it's such a simple thing. And then someone can say in all these millions of like Kevin's canceled, you know, canceled Kevin Spacey. I can say it in these different ways.
The Glengarry Glen Ross reference to regardless. It's just a good line. Will you go to lunch?
It's a great line. Yeah. But I do think that there's
like 17 times in the movies.
Right. You do. Yeah. But I do think that like physicality is very important. And I think that someone like Qualley is with especially this kind of role, you know, which leans into body horror, but it also has to lean into this notion of like beauty as a commodity and everything. Like she does a pretty remarkable job. And again, it is all the choices that both of these performers are making. Oh, I mean, and Dennis Quaid third are making too. I think that that's very, like pretty compelling when someone can do that. I just wanted to say, I like that you said choices, because I agree. I think this is a movie that's a lot like that.
No, you're not wrong. And I do agree between this and Kinds of Kindness. It's a lot of specific kind of uses that she's putting herself through. And it speaks to her choices as an actress. I mean, if you're, you know, one of the it girls of the moment, and this is a film that certainly reflects on that very obviously, you could choose to do the lesser kinds of stuff, whether it's, you know, the comic book movies or the broad comedy things that are offered to, I assume, only on Netflix. Or you could work with Yorgos Lanthimos and Quentin Tarantino and a Coen brother.
Right.
That's tailoring yourself to a certain kind of thing. And let's not forget that along with Kinds of Kindness, she also took a basketball to the face in Poor Things or whatever, which was hilarious.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The replacement for Emma Stone, and she just like takes a ball in the face. And it's right. One of the funniest things in the movie.
Right. That's true. Well, you know, I was just thinking of the notion of subtlety and choices. I think it's interesting that Long Legs and Cuckoo came out within weeks of each other or whatever, because like Cuckoo is all about Hunter Schafer a lot of it through, there's physicality, but a lot of it through dialogue and like the vernacular, mm-hmm. making choices to make her character seem like an authentic teen. And then you have Micah Monroe in Long Legs, who I guess we would call that kind of a subtle performance, because it's a performance that's really relying upon a last minute revelation that is like, oh, that's why the character seems so reserved. That's why this person doesn't seem. And she has to play it that way. And at first glance, you're kind of like, wow, she's just such a stoic FBI agent or whatever. I don't know. Actually, I mean, now that I'm saying that, I was like, wow, there's a lot of kind of interesting performances by a lot of actresses this year.
In horror
not
movies.
To say that that doesn't happen every year, but I mean, yeah. So
in horror movies, which is always the case.
Yes, that is true. Yeah. That's true.
And rarely recognized on a grander level.
Yeah.
To speak to Long Legs really quick, one could call it subtle, I suppose, although I think it's a pretty nervy performance that, you know, has your attention.
It is, but you don't really know.
I don't think
why,
that's not me,
I
that's,
guess.
That's yeah, not me saying yeah. It's over the top or hammy or anything. It's just more.
Right.
I feel like, outside of the stuff with Cage, she's the main focus of that movie. You're always aware of the thing she's doing because she's making a lot of choices.
Correct. Right.
Movie. You know, it's not, I don't know. It's not, I can't think of a better example right now. I don't know, like Jamie Lee Curtis in the first Halloween, where she's basically a wallflower right. until she's not anymore. Regardless, no, you're not like the point about subtlety versus you know, over broad. I mean, this movie's called The Substance, yet it's so highly stylized. That's not by accident.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
that's not a revelation by any means. It's more of like, yeah, we know what we're doing here. Which I think, again, speaks to the kind of bludgeoning of the themes in certain areas when it comes.
Can I ask you, I said my last review on We Live Entertainment was for a movie called My Old Ass, which is with Aubrey Plaza and Maisie Stella?
Yes.
Something Stella? Go.
Yeah.
And these are both movies where two different performers are kind of playing the same person.
Yeah.
But what I... One of the things I spoke about My Old Ass was I was like, you know, it's kind of refreshing. I don't know the last time I've seen a really kind of fun story that I would consider magical realism. And magical realism is usually when you have some weird fantastical element, but the movie has no interest in really explaining like the science of it all. This movie, The Substance, is interesting because it also has no interest in explaining how this miracle drug does what it does. However, unlike My Old Ass, this movie is very much hinged upon the audience needs to know what its specific rules are. You know, it's 7 days. You can't do, you know, you cannot deviate from what we're telling you ever, or else the consequences happen. In something like My Old Ass, they're not really as concerned about that. It's very lighter and more dialogue heavy. Kind of sentimental, like kind of movie, but this movie very always focused on like this voiceover that's telling, you know, Elizabeth Sparkle, you must adhere to these rules. But at the same time, it's not really interested in the science of how does this work or whatever. And that's in both of them, you just kind of go with it, right?
Still going a step further, right? Because like this movie is not magical realism. This movie is...
No, it's not. Like, that's what I'm saying.
Like,
yeah.
Like you said, it has very specific parameters in mind. And unless you want like a 4-hour lecture from a scientist to tell you why it works this way, I mean, there's not much else it can do to expand upon that. But magical realism, yeah. I mean, My Old Ass certainly applies in that way. And that's something I like about that movie, the fact that it does have a kind of magical element that's just exists and the focus of the plot,
you know, somehow Palpatine returned.
There's no stakes in regards to Aubrey Plaza existing in this society.
Correct. Right. Right.
I mean, I do see magical realism presented in films. I mean, Bo is Afraid from last year is magical realism.
Yes. Yeah. I would count that. Yeah.
It's a common thing. It's not, you know, always in like the most mainstream of films. And also I see just a shit ton more movies than you do, but I mean, it is something I like to see because yes, there's when it comes to like, you know, seeing movies and admiring them, not for the imaginary stakes they want to present or whatnot, and like seeing what other angles it has. There's a fascination there because it's just, it feels like it's straying from the norm. A reason why I like My Old Ass the way I do. Like it's a coming of age story. That's kind of standard when you put a break it down, but it has elements that I think make it more winning. Like yes, having one's own self coming to visit them with no real rhyme or reason to why. Just, yeah, that's how it is.
Right. I guess Charlie Kaufman would be kind of magical realism.
Very much.
To, you know, he's using it to kind of highlight absurdity, you know, especially in being John Malkovich and stuff. Like, but you're right. We don't really care about how all this happens.
That's like, why he walks the same line, because some of his movies are more overtly dealing specifically with like how this thing, like Eternal Sunshine, how this thing works.
That's true. Eternal Sunshine that's true.
And it's a major aspect of the plot line, as opposed to just things exist the way they are because that's the way they are. With this movie, getting into kind of that aspect of it, I did like that I had such a... I like that the film makes it very clear how this all works early on, so you're never confused. Right. I think that, you know, if you have films like this that want to establish certain stakes or what have you, I appreciate when it can, like, make it so clear why this thing, or, you know, what this thing is, what it's going to do, and goes off from there. And this movie certainly has consequences that come from not abiding by said rules and what have you. And that's also very fun to see play out as horrific as it can be. We've talked a lot about kind of the front half of this film and like the initial, you know, the setups and whatnot. Did you enjoy how did you react to like where this film goes and it's, you know, further on in the story?
Well, it's funny. I've been working on my review for this and I wasn't sure because I don't want to spoil movies, but the last act. Okay, so the movie, I mean, this isn't a spoiler. The first part of the movie is Elizabeth, and then you meet Sue, and then it becomes Sue. And so you're like, okay, that's the two characters. That's why they get a title card. There is a third title card. And what I find interesting, but I actually feel like it would be maybe more interesting, like maybe talking to you and stuff, is that like in a podcast form, is that what happens in that third act, I saw in a video game maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I have seen other mediums, movies, television, take that. So when you get to that moment, I'm like, oh, they're doing this. They're doing that thing. Like, why are they doing that thing? I sort of get in the context of this movie they are, but I'm always kind of interested culturally, like why filmmakers or gameplay, whatever, artists seem to lock on to a certain thing, because it's so much like, and I'm pretty sure you've played this game, but I mean, like it is so much in the game. I think it's the last 10 minutes of the game. But like, I'm like, why? I'm like, what is it in this last past half decade that certain people use that narrative to kind of bring everything to a boil, to a chaotic conclusion? I don't know. I think that's interesting. I wasn't sure how much to say in the review though, because if you know what a game I'm talking about and then you read the review, you're like, oh, so that's the end of the movie. Like, and I was like, well, I don't want to ruin it, but I think that's an interesting conversation. If that makes sense.
I mean, now I got to know what game you're talking about and I'll ask you after this, but,
right.
Cause I have an idea.
Well, but you know what the end is. Well, of the movie,
but I'm trying to think of like what game this corresponds to, because
it's huge. It's very specific. Actually, I think some people have said that ending in the game is harkening back to like Japanese anime, like Akira, and maybe a Miyazaki movie. Yeah, I can sort of see it. Like,
based on just this movie, I can think of a lot of things that it's referencing or whatnot. What I like about where this thing goes is, it's taking steps to deliver on a kind of what if set of parameters. Like, since we've been so geared to understand how the substance works, while you're watching everything else unfold, you have to be wondering in the back of your head, what if they do this or what if they do that? And the film is like, oh, we're going to show you what happens if you break certain rules or do certain things the wrong way or what have. It really wants to deliver on that. And within those moments, that's where I'm like, okay, so I'm still trying to appreciate the satirical elements of all of this and what it's parroting and what it's attacking in the realm of Hollywood and celebrity culture, what have you. But I'm also like really rooted in just my own human nature of being like, don't do this. That's going to have a bad effect on you. I don't want to see harm come your way. But I also kind of do, because I want to see what that's going to look like. So the fact that it's like, it's, you know, stimulating my brain in a variety of ways, that's a lot of fun. And the fact this movie by the very end is like, you know, it just throws a lot out the window. And it's like, and now this, and it becomes chaos, to say the least. Yeah, all right, I'm into that. I'm into
anybody who doesn't like horror films will always say, not everybody, a lot of people who don't like scary movies, they will be like, I don't understand why the girl who's only in her underwear decides to go to the basement when it's dark at night. Like, why would you do that? What an idiot or whatever. And I'm like, yes, there's a rationale there that it's like, why would you do this or whatever? But like you just said, I understand the rules. I know you shouldn't break the rules, but I kind of want to see you break the rules. it's like, that is kind of the genre. Like, so if you tell me it has to be 7 days, you have to do this, I'm like, well, obviously we're going to break that rule, like, and see what happens. But I mean, yes, if you watch these movies, you know, it is inevitable, you know, that it's going to happen. And our enjoyment is to see when they break that rule, what they've come up with. And I think they come up with some pretty good like stuff.
There's an aspect that I really enjoyed where a notable thing takes place during this finale that's set at like a major television production. And a main character has to kind of, it's so silly, has to kind of work their way through a number of people or what have you without really like giving away the fact that something's drastically changed them, and they're able to pull that off and then provide a reveal in front of a large population. That speaks to exactly what I'm saying as far as satire is fully in place. It is fully embracing that this is a world that does not exist, but we're in this heightened, to say the least, stylized reality where a number of events can play out with somebody getting through all of that and not no one else being the aware, and then just fully going full tilt and going as disgusting as possible with the results of all of it.
Well, it's so interesting because when that moment happens, when you think the person is going to be revealed and then these other people just go along with it, you're like, wait, what? Like, my first instinct was, I was like, wait, this isn't it's all a dream thing, is it? I'm like, it can't be that. I was like, this is too extreme easy. Or whatever. Yeah, that's too easy. It can't be that. But I'm like, how is no one else noticing this? Like, how? But yeah, I thought the same thing you did.
Some other things I note before we just kind of wrap up. The other things I like, just kind of note that I like about this. I like the use of billboards and paintings and posters in this movie. There's a notably large billboard that's like right outside Elizabeth Sparkle's fabulous apartment.
Yes.
That is a constant kind of theme in the film that I enjoy.
There's also her painting.
Also her painting of herself.
The painting is kind of like reverse Dorian Gray.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a
repeated hallway we see often that's filled with different posters that I think is very, there's a lot of like stuff
that always
like
reminds
that.
Me of more, did she say her influence is Kubrick? Because that reminds me of like Shining.
Not specifically, but I mean, it's
the
very
color
obvious.
Style, the colors, color
the,
palette,
the carpet. Yeah, it's very obviously
carpet.
Patterned.
It's like, yeah.
It's not subtle what that's doing. And even like Dennis Quaid's various suits are always like a lot of this garish colors and what have you.
I will say credit to, you know, obviously the movie is Moore and Qualley, and they're incredible, but I will say kind of credit to Quaid, and just like how in Maxine, it's Mia Goth who's fantastic, but I do appreciate Kevin Bacon.
I thought
being
Kevin Bacon's great. I thought he was great in
like, it's kind of fun to see these like these older veteran actors like just really take these scenery chewing terrible people like roles. Like I'm like, oh yeah, that's a nice pairing of these two.
That's
like,
the thing though. There's a separation where it's easy, like it is scenery chewing, but for one thing, it's by design. It's not like
I don't mean it's a slam.
I don't think you do. But I do appreciate that it's, you know, it's not just Quay being like, I guess I'm gonna do my thing. It's like he's being told to do a very specific thing, and he's like, let's go, and he does it, and it's very effective. Like it's very, like, you know, I like Quaid, fair enough. He's not my favorite actor. He's hardly a terrible actor. He's just a good performer. I generally like seeing, but like watching him here is like he's embracing this with all he needs, and it's working really well. It's giving me the exact feeling of what I'm supposed to get from this kind of a guy.
Well, I will say one of the last things I want to say before we wrap up too is honestly of the three, I'm not necessarily a huge Demi Moore Like, I don't think I've ever seen St. Elmo's Fire. I liked Ghost,
that's not a highlight for her, St. Elmo's Fire.
No, but I'm just saying, but it's a pretty popular, iconic movie. Like, I mean, I don't know why I'm not a huge, like, G.I. Jane, I don't really remember that. Like, I mean, so going into this, I really love Quali, I love Quaid. And I was like, okay, so Moore is the lead, but she's great. She's at a perfect time in her career, in her real life, to do this kind of role, obviously. But yeah, she's terrific. I'm gonna
hate how cliched it is to say it's brave, but it is brave to kind of.
It is.
But,
I mean,
for someone specifically like Demi Moore, who's, you know, much of her not just her career, but her celebrity is based around her looks, and she has to put all vanity off. Everything has to be thrown out the window for her.
To be fair, she looks fantastic for her age. She looks amazing.
I mean, regardless.
Not for age, just for any age. She's like 61. She looks incredible. Like,
millionaires know how to spend their money. This revelation that someone that has the money knows someone that has the money knows how to take care of themselves. That's great for them.
Correct.
What I'm saying is, she's not an A-list star anymore as far as the kinds of roles she's getting. When she acts, it's not in big prestige dramas or whatnot. It's in random crap that you don't really care about. So by default, this is easily her best thing in decades. I would agree that I'm not the biggest fan of Moore as far as I don't look back at her past films and be like, those are some real classic that she's been a part of. She's been a part of good movies, no doubt. I mean, you mentioned Ghost, A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men,
obviously she has notable parts of her career, but in terms of her giving a performance that's going to be memorable, it's hard to think there's going to be one that's more memorable than this. That's not baked around the inherent nostalgia of her making a clay jar,
and that's why it's
lazy or whatever,
and that's why it's the best of the decade for Peter Paris. I'm sorry, I have to go.
No, it's fine. We can wrap up. Yeah. The Substance, it's in theaters right now. It's doing
fantastic.
It's doing not bad for a movie release on a small
scale. No.
When did you go see this movie?
As soon as possible, if you can. On the big screen, the sound design, everything about it works. And it works also with a crowd because of that. I think sometimes movies like this benefit with the crowd because of its satire quality. There's always a chance if you watch it by yourself and you somehow don't get it, then those jokes don't land. And I think a crowd kind of embraces the absurdity and the weirdness of it. So I say see it. Like, if I said specifically, I would say see it like in a midnight, like a late show. Feels like a late night. Even though it's 2.5 hours, I promise it doesn't feel like 2.5 hours.
I entirely agree with everything you just said. I think that's a very good way to see this movie. It's certainly worth watching. But yes, a crowd element, it's too entertaining to not have that. So So Peter, thank you. Where can people find more of you online?
I'm on my socials as Pajamo with an O. I write for We Live Entertainment, and I have a YouTube channel that I haven't done in forever, but it's also under Peter Paris.
Great. Peter, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thanks for having me on.
Happy to have you here. And that's going to do it. Thanks.